Hey, everybody. What is going on with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? Why aren't schools open? And I also take your questions that you emailed me, freedom@charliekirk.com. Action-packed episode brought to you by all of you that support us at charliekirk.com/support. If this episode has blessed you, if this show has impacted your life in any way, shape, or form, please consider supporting us directly. It really helps us continue to grow and not be reliant on the cancel culture corporate sponsors that so often are skittish and run to the hills. charliekirk.com/support. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA and you're a high school or college student listening to this, get involved today at tpusa.com. Important episode. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
So we are partnering with our buddy Mike Lindell, and he's under fire right now. And if you want to support Mike Lindell and get great Made in America products, go to MyPillow.com/Kirk. That's MyPillow.com/Kirk for the special promo code. So go right now to MyPillow.com, use the promo code Kirk. Help out Mike Lindell. He's under a lot of fire from the liberal mob. Let's stand up together with him and go to MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. Do it right now. It'll help out Mike and help our country. I didn't plan on spending time on Cortez this show, but here we are. So Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she does these long Instagram live streams where she just goes on and on and on. So she was recounting the Capitol tragedy on January the 6th. And in the same live stream, I think she mentioned that as a younger person, she was sexually assaulted. No minimization of that. And not getting into that. I hope that she gets the support she needs and all of that. I mean that non-sarcastically. However, what I am going to focus on is when she was seemingly misrepresenting where she was and what she was doing during the Capitol tragedy. For what reason, I'm not exactly sure. So this is now one of the top stories in the country where AOC claims something, but the facts say otherwise. Play tape.
And so I look through this door hinge and I see this white man in a black beanie bump, just like open the door of my personal office and come inside the personal office.
AOC, that was a police officer, right? Okay, so it was a police officer who happened to be a white person who was actually looking out for her by all public reports. And so the controversy is brewing over why is AOC making stuff up in regards to where she was and what she was doing. It was a Capitol police officer. So AOC said, quote, "I just thought to myself, they got inside. I thought I was going to die. This is a moment where I thought everything is over." And so let's go to cut 35 first. Cut 35. Let's play that.
I don't know. So deeply rattled. I'm still processing the end of my life when I come out. And I come out and this man is a Capitol police officer. There was no partner. Was not yelling, you know, Capitol Police, et cetera, et cetera. But then it didn't feel right because he was looking at me with a tremendous amount of anger and hostility.
So this was a Capitol Police officer that was trying to help her. And she immediately said that he was looking at me with a lot of anger and hostility. Let's go to cut 36, where the story gets even more complicated. Cut 36.
I talked to G, my legislative director, after the fact, and he said, no, I didn't know if he was there to help us or hurt us either. And G was actually like, this man came with so much hostility that that G was sizing him up and didn't know if he was going to have to fight him. So like, you know, like so many other communities in this country, like just that presence doesn't necessarily give you a clear signal if you're safe or not.
I want to reinforce what you just said there. That's a Capitol Hill police officer that was there to help you, AOC, and you had to size him up. By the way, can we just say, AOC, just please, can you stop saying like every other word? You're a 14-year-old, please. It drives me nuts. So she said he's white and he had aggression and hostility. How do you know that? How do you know the aggression? What's your evidence? Did he start overthrowing tables? And so AOC, I'm wondering, the Capitol Hill police officer who was brutally murdered, did you know whether or not that he was there to hurt you or not, AOC? Who's the racist in this equation, AOC, where you're automatically assuming that a white police officer comes with aggression and hostility, and you said, my legislative advisor had to size him up. Is that what you do to police officers? You size them up, AOC? There's no evidence of Capitol Hill police acting nothing but heroically throughout that entire set of circumstances. Size him up? So where was AOC? Was she in the Capitol office building? No, she wasn't. She was not in the Capitol building. This is up from the National Pulse. The rioters focused all of their attention on the Capitol rotunda, as you can see in the middle. AOC's office is in the Cannon office building, which is on the left side of your screen, which I believe is actually north, if we were talking about Washington, D.C. geography. And she was nearly a half a mile away. No, that wouldn't be north. That would be south. The map diagram I have backwards. She's south. I'm sorry. The rioters never went into her building. The rioters never came close to her building. So here's just a good life lesson for all of you watching this right now. You don't have to live stream a stream of consciousness about everything. You don't. And so AOC just set back the cause of trying to hold a lot of these Capitol infiltrators accountable, because now AOC is all of a sudden entering and introducing a narrative that is pathologically untrue. She was not in the Capitol. She wasn't. She was in a different building. Now, I understand that if AOC was saying in her live stream, well, I was afraid they might have come there next, I was really spooked, and we didn't know what to do, that's fine. When all of a sudden you say, I thought I was going to die. I heard a sound. Where is she? Where is she? And end up being a Capitol police officer. And you describe him as a guy in a beanie. And your legislative director had to size him up. That is so unbelievably deceiving. In fact, it's intentionally deceiving, AOC. But why is she doing this? Are the facts of January 6th not enough for you? Do you now have to go create another narrative that the police officers are actually prowling the halls? Are you trying to all of a sudden add to some sort of a narrative that your encounter is now worthy of more examination? I'm really confused what the motive of exaggeration is here. So there are some people that have now taken to the great internet and are now calling Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez Alexandria Ocasio-Smollett. In fact, the internet has taken over that. I think that might be a little bit unfair, to be honest with you. I think it's hilarious, but I think that's mildly unfair. I mean, Smollett did concoct the entire thing. I don't think we could argue Cortez launched what happened on January the 6th. However, Cortez is just outdoing herself. It would be a great time for Cortez just to stop talking about this. She's actually ruining the Democrats' moral high ground here. The Democrats had a moral high ground here, and she's ruining it. She's messing it up. If I was Jamie Raskin, and we're going to get to some news with him in just a second, some breaking news, I'd say, AOC, stop it. So AOC says this, quote, "The sad thing about disinformation is that once the truth comes out, the damage has already been done. People have already been misled, radicalized, and believed lies to a point where their hatred has brewed to violence. That's what led to the six, and it's happening now." You mean when you were misleading your entire Instagram live audience that you were in the Capitol Rotunda, not giving the logistical architecture of the Capitol layout that you were nearly half a mile away? And I'm not diminishing that that might not have been traumatizing or scary, but it's also very misleading when people do not understand that people are thinking that you're right outside the door of where this happened. And you then walk through the process that a guy with a beanie came in. It was a police officer. And then you had your legislative director size him up. What does that even mean, size him up? Is that legal? Are you allowed to size up a police officer? No, he was there to help you, AOC. And instead of saying thank you, he had rage and hostility. Well, maybe next time let's defund the Capitol Hill police together, AOC, and you could have your legislative aide defend against everyone and size up all the terrorists. How about that next time? In the entire live stream I saw from AOC, I did not hear one thank you. Maybe there was one and I missed it. I watched plenty of the clip. Why does this matter so much? Well, we're trying to impeach a private citizen over the details of this case. So AOC is trying to go to her people, her millions and millions of followers, and say it really was an awful day, which it was, and it was so awful, I almost died. I thought I was going to die. The New York Post says, quote, AOC blasted for exaggerating trauma from the Capitol riot experience. So I'm not going to get into the idea of whether or not she was traumatized. I think someone could be traumatized whether they're in the Capitol or not. But she said that she had a, quote, very close encounter. That is not true. She said, I'd had to reconcile with whether or not I was going to live. The officer, AOC said, quote, had anger and hostility in her eye, in his eyes. And so now the House Democrats are calling people to testify in Congress to go give their testimony. My truth is what it should be called. Members to share their stories of Capitol attack on House floor. AOC will kick off the special order hour. Do the Democrats just enjoy rubbing this stuff in our face? I'm convinced of it. I'm convinced the Democrats' new strategy is every time we start to criticize one of their people, like Eric Swalwell with Fang Fang, the Chinese agent, they just put it front and center right in front of us. It's like, here's Fang Fang and Swalwell right up in your face. So AOC is going to start this storytelling session with other members of Congress. And now that in and of itself, I'm not going to say is good or bad, but I hope AOC actually tells the truth from the Senate, from the congressional floor. Not that she was very close encounter. Maybe just a thank you to law enforcement would be wonderful. In fact, I'm going to have our team watch very closely the remarks of Ayanna Pressley and Rashida Tlaib. Why? I wonder if they're going to say, thank you, police. The very same people that have been pushing to defund the police in our country. The police saved your life, arguably. We don't know the motivations. We don't know what would happen without police. It's hard to say that. But if we're going to take a logical narrative, if the police saved your life, why do you want to get rid of the police, Ayanna Pressley? So I want to get to some sound here. I want to talk about schools. What is going on with our schools? Why is every school in the country not open? No, what is the answer for that? Outside of greedy, self-interested public sector teacher unions. Play cut 69 with Dan Henninger, please.
The data on enrollments has been coming out recently. It's quite striking. In the state of California, public school enrollments are down 155,000. They're down 45,000 in New York City, a record. And these parents are looking for alternatives. They're putting their kids in private schools, parochial Catholic schools, homeschooling. They're also looking at alternatives like so-called learning pods or micro schools.
the positive of that is that I encourage every parent who can to homeschool your children any way you possibly can. However, the issue is that most parents can't afford that. They have to send their kids to public school. So you want to talk about growing wealth inequality over the next 10 years? You want to talk about growing income inequality? Keep the schools in awful shape. So the rich parents will send their kids to still get educated. And the working class parents who can't take their kids out of school, who can't take their kids and put them into private school or can't put them into homeschooling situation, what will they do with them? They're going to keep them in. Over 10 years, you are going to see the trend lines in such dramatic fashion. Schools should be wide open in our country. The education of our children has been on almost a 12-month delay. Suicides are up, alcoholism, drug addiction. We have been on this for nearly a year. In fact, a year ago, just about a year ago, coming up on this Sunday, I got to double check the dates. I think actually it might have been a couple weeks later. Anyway, is when I first heard about the Chinese coronavirus and my book came out, The MAGA Doctrine, made the New York Times bestseller list, which we were very happy about. And it's a week I'll never forget. In fact, I could write an extended essay about my book launch. I could write a book about it because it was very interesting. I was doing the book thing and doing a ton of media. I mean, you do dozens of radio interviews in a day. You do every television program you possibly can. You do podcasting, everything you can imagine you could do. And we had producer Andrew there. We had a great team. We had a lot of fun. But it was really interesting because kind of this thing that was looming over us as the book was being launched was the chatter around the coronavirus, the Chinese coronavirus. And I remember being at an event that we did in Phoenix, Arizona. You remember this, Connor, when you picked me up at the airport? We went to that one place in Scottsdale. And we walked in and there was hand sanitizer everywhere. I said, what are you doing? Why does everyone have hand? And that was the first moment when I started to see the virus impact human behavior. And never for a moment did I sit down and think, how do I extrapolate this out? Like, where does this go? Because I was dealing from a place of a logical fallacy, quite honestly. And I learned a lot about how I can now better game out my thinking to prevent chaos from happening in the future. So I was using a logical fallacy of, well, there's no way we're going to shut down the country. This thing will go away in a minute. When I didn't actually play it out, I said, well, what if this is something that's never happened before? So we were crisscrossing the country, going back and forth. And I remember we were at Mar-a-Lago in early March. So yeah, it wasn't exactly early, about 11 months ago. And this was basically the last night before all chaos broke loose. Let's just put it that way, right? And the Brazilian president, Bolsonaro, was there. It was no social distancing. And that was the last moment of real America. Producer Andrew was there. But what was so interesting to see, though, is how in the midst of all of that, we went from total open society to complete safetyism and not even bearing the costs of, hey, if we do the safetyism thing, are our children going to be properly educated? Just so everyone is clear, we are now closing in on the 1 year mark of 15 days to slow the spread. Connor put in our message here, he said that was the first event when I saw people doing elbow bumps instead of handshakes. And today is day 324 of 15 days to slow the spread. San Francisco schools are still completely closed. Chicago schools are still closed, largely because of Chicago teacher unions, almost only because of them, one of the most corrupt institutions in the entire country. And I read from a Wall Street Journal piece, quote, in Chicago, the nation's third largest system is on the brink of a strike, despite press pleas from the city's progressive mayor, Lori Lightfoot, for the teachers to return. Unions are resisting opening in Los Angeles, Boston, Cleveland, Philadelphia, and Washington. Michael Mulgrew, head of the teacher unions in New York City, says the schools may not open until September. Then why are they still being paid? San Francisco Board of Education has enough time on its hands to vote 6-1 to cancel the names of the schools, but not enough time to open the schools that now have the names that are canceled. When asked why Chicago teachers would be threatening to strike now, President Biden's chief of staff, Ron Klain, peacetime kleptocrat, said money. Well, at least Mr. Klain, according to here, has an A+ for honesty. One might wish to believe politicians such as Lightfoot and New York City's Bill de Blasio are begging the teachers to return out of concern for their children. Here's a reality check. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Funding levels for public schools in many cities are a function of enrollment levels. By pulling their kids out of these schools, parents are removing the automatic funding floor. There is no reason why schools should still be closed. Zero. The future of our children has been put in permanent jeopardy out of the selfishness of the safetyist ruling class. I want to get to a cut here. Play cut 63.
There is increasing data to suggest that schools can safely reopen, and that safe reopening does not suggest that teachers need to be vaccinated. Vaccination of teachers is not a prerequisite for safe reopening of schools.
So that is not anywhere close to what the Chicago teacher unions or the other schools are saying at all. Do we have cut 75 as well? Let's play cut 75.
There's no indication that, you know, the teachers union in Chicago or San Francisco are willing to budge at this point. If it comes down to a binary choice, who would the president choose, the kids or the teachers?
I think that's a little bit unfair how you pose that question.
No, it's not unfair. It's that simple. The children are being held hostage by selfish public sector teacher unions. It's that simple. Do you guys know what the rubber room is? The rubber room is a physical building where teachers who have been accused of crimes, where teachers that have been accused of not showing up to work, that they are not allowed to be fired because of public sector teacher unions, because of contracts that were put forward, because of tenure. Public sector teacher unions, which, by the way, is the American Federation of Teachers and the National Education Association, are one of the largest reasons. It is the predominant reason why we have not been able to get any sort of educational reform on a national level done in our country, which, by the way, goes back to a thesis that we talked at length yesterday, which is, as Justice Louis Brandeis said, states need to be laboratories of democracy. You want to know where kids are suffering the most? Democrat states. Florida schools are wide open. Florida has school choice. They have educational scholarships. In Florida, they're doing wonderfully. And every single Democrat policy is at war with human nature. Here's one law of nature. Children need to be educated. How do we go about doing that? Behind some sort of computer screen? Of course not. It's insincere and it's inhumane. It leads to failing results, radical ideologies being spread, and even a more inhumane, inhuman agenda that gets pushed forward. Let's play cut 76.
Well, I saw the comments of Dr. Walensky, but I will say that even she would say, if she were standing here, she's welcome to come anytime, but she's in Atlanta, that they have not released their official guidance yet from the CDC on the vaccination of teachers and what would be needed to ensure the safe reopening of schools. And so we'd certainly defer to that, which we hope to see soon.
And so the White House press secretary seems to be contradicting the CDC director. Incredible. Schools need to be open. Open schools now. Democrats are owned by the teacher unions. They are the largest Democrat donors. The fact that schools that are not open is a moral travesty. Okay, let's get to some questions here. Hey, Charlie, I'm a student at a local community college in California. I'm currently taking a philosophy class. Oh, boy. I have a classmate who thinks we should add more justices to the Supreme Court. What would happen if we did? I already answered this question before, actually, and it's faith. It's the ratio thing. It's to say that the population has increased and we need to increase. If that was really an applicable argument, then we'd have five presidents by now if we need more leaders versus our population. So thank you, Faith. I appreciate that. But I did answer that in a previous episode. Okay, let's go to here. All right. So this is a question I keep on getting. Okay. Hey, Charlie, thanks so much for your hard work and your team for doing to get the truth out and keep people informed and engaged. Y'all are doing a fantastic job. Thank you. My concern since the November election is in election integrity. I live in Atlanta, Georgia, and I know I don't need to tell you what a dumpster fire that was and is currently. You're right. I've heard you say we need to advocate in our cities for better election policies. I could not agree more. My question is, how does one do that? I want to be proactive, but I have no idea where to start. Do you know any information that could be helpful? I also want to be committed. I also want to commend you for your faith in speaking boldly about how our nation was founded on Judeo-Christian values. It was. And hopefully will continue to be built on that. Brandy, thank you for your question. Yes. Fine state and local officials demand stricter signature verification standards in Georgia and audits of the voter rolls and the people on the voter rolls. And basically just keep on repeating, we need the Florida model in Georgia. It's that simple. The technical details can be worked out. The Florida model in Georgia. It's that simple. You want fair and free elections? Put the Florida model in Georgia. Okay, next question here. I actually want to get to one of the questions earlier that got sent here. Some people are asking about our Illinois segment. You can find that on YouTube, and we'll also put the supporting documents on charliekirk.com. Dear Charlie, I'm a supporter of the Charlie Kirk Show. I am subscribed to your podcast, and I listen to your programs. This morning, I arrived late to your program on Salem Media. You stated you reject the comments made by Marjorie Taylor Greene. Maybe you already discussed it. I missed it, but which comments do you reject? The stuff around Sandy Hook would probably be a good place to start. And also the embracing of the complete and total fake, baseless conspiracy theory of the message boards. And also her denying 9/11 would also be another one. So, again, I'm not going to hyper-focus on that, but I'm also not going to defend what somebody said just because they have an R next to their name. With that being said, do I think she should be expelled from Congress? No. Do I think that she should be given grace to apologize and add context? Of course. That's what adults do. And she was given that opportunity yesterday, and I'm proud to be able to do that. But thank you, Kathy, for that question. And so appreciate that. Email us freedom@charliekirk.com. Okay, let's get this one here. Hey, Charlie, kudos to you for identifying and speaking out on this critical issue of campaign finance and election reform. I was shocked to hear last fall from our local party rep, the Republican Party demands and collects from new representatives and senators as soon as they arrive in Washington, let alone how much they demand for committee assignments and position of leadership. No wonder they are beholden to special interests. You're right. Also, foreign funds are supposedly banning campaigns, but out-of-state funds freely flow into various states and influence state elections. Well, foreign money also comes in through corporations. Different issue for a different time. The election campaign process itself needs reform, too, eliminating the mass mail and media ad campaigns, which waste money and provide little to no useful information. I agree. Candidate forums and debates are much more helpful. Goes on to say, currently Tennessee only requires 25 signatures for state rep, state Senate, governor, U.S. House, or Senate candidates. And she's just proposing some reforms. Well, Nancy, you're spot on here. If we are going to fix some of the problems plaguing our country, we have to fix campaign finance and election reform. It is one of the biggest problems currently facing our country. From who funds our elections, the transparency behind it, are you beholden to it? Should someone who is currently lobbying for contracts from the government be able to also send contributions to representatives that have a say in that sort of process? The answer is, of course not. Email us your questions, everybody, freedom@charliekirk.com. On the Charlie Kirk Show podcast, we have that new episode out with Ron, not with Ron DeSantis, but about Ron DeSantis. We have Senator Rand Paul. We have some other conversations coming out that I encourage you guys to check out. So just right now, Apple Podcast or Spotify, type in Charlie Kirk Show. It helps us so much, and we might even be able to beat the New York Times if you guys help us out with that. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com to start a high school group or a college group. And finally, if you'd like to support us, go to charliekirk.com/support. God bless you guys. Speak to you soon.